Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show. This is your host, Mike West. I have been absent for a little while, but I am back tonight. And I am supposed to be joined by Daniel Dark. However, he is in the wilds of Tennessee and unable to get through at the moment. So right now it looks like it is just me. But we're going to have quite a guest here joining us shortly. But in the meantime, let me inform everybody as to what has been going on recently. I don't know how many of you know, but the reason why I've been absent over the last few weeks is because my wife received a cancer diagnosis. So we have been dealing with that, and I thank everyone for their messages, their well wishes, their thoughts, and their prayers. It's been amazing, the outpouring that my wife and I have received, and I want to take the opportunity to thank everyone for it. It's sometimes you don't know how many friends you have until you're at your lowest point, and then you find out. And while I didn't want to get to the low point, it has been nice to know how many friends and well wishers and faithful leaders out there who care and who show it. So it's been wonderful. I am continuing to work on the final installment in the Legacy of the Gods. However, that has been going a little bit slower as I've been dealing with all the issues. But work is continuing, and sometimes it's good to throw yourself in to the work and let that kind of help take your mind off of things. So that has been progressing as well. Also, there's been a lot of movement on the audiobook front through Seventh Star Press. The audiobook for my Harmony book, it's actually the second Harmony book, but it's the first Harmony book that was released through Seventh Star Press, Cinema of Shadows, is out and available now on audio, and it has been doing very well, and I thank everyone who's picked up a copy, and I hope you are enjoying it. I've been hearing from quite a few of you who say that you are, it's really an experience to hear. Basically, it's almost a radio drama, and it's really, really cool to hear my words brought to life in a new way. In addition to that one that is already out in the production stage, we have the first novel of the Legacy of the Gods series, Poseidon's Children, that is being created as we speak, and also Spook House, the third Harmony novel, which took place right after Cinema of Shadows. That is also in the works. So all of those projects are ongoing, and hopefully we'll have some announcements concerning Legacy of the Gods Book 4, Cronus' Return, in the coming weeks and months. Looking for a cover reveal coming up soon. And also, there'll be interior illustrations that are being done as well. And every day I'm getting a little bit closer to the end. So my original goal was to have it done and to the publisher and out in time for Horror Hound. Because of recent developments, I don't think that's going to be possible. In fact, I know that's not going to be possible, unfortunately. But it is still my goal to have it out through Seven Star Press later this year. So we are still moving forward on that. And again, on the audiobook fronts as well. And those are going to be released as they become available. It's interesting. We have two different narrators. We have a gentleman who's narrating The Legacy of the Gods, and we have a lady who has done an amazing job with the Harmony books. And so I'll be curious to hear from faithful readers as to what is people's favorites. I thought we had Daniel calling in, but doesn't look like he was able to get through. So I'm still holding out hope that he's able to get through to us at some point. But looks like he's still trying to get through. So we're hoping to have him in. Looks like people are getting into the chat room now. So it might be a network issue that has hopefully been resolved. I know I was able to get in by the skin of my teeth to start the show today, which. As all of you know, it's normally Stephen Zimmer that does the heavy lifting with regard to the technical side of the show. But unfortunately, he and Holly have lost their beloved cat, Dubious, this week. Lots of people in the house having some bad news lately, but we're all dealing with it, our various newses in our own ways, and hopefully Stephen and Holly will be back with us very soon. And we wish them well and let them know that we're thinking about them. But then Daniel is continuing to try to get through. So hopefully now that people are able to get into the chat room and whatnot, Daniel and our guests will be able to get through as well. But I am looking forward this weekend to seeing the new Quentin Tarantino film that is coming out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which deals with Hollywood in the 60s. So it'll be interesting to see. I will say this, that from the trailers I've seen, the person that they have, I don't know the actor's name, but the person that they have doing Bruce Lee does the best Bruce Lee impersonation that I have ever seen. So it will be interesting to see how that movie comes together. It doesn't seem like the normal Tarantino storyline, which is normally more of the grindhouse slant on various genres. So we'll see what he does with Hollywood in the 60s. But I'm looking forward to that one. And I should have a Blu-ray coming in the mail of my 3D version of Alita Battle Angel, which I'm looking forward to. I did get to see that in the theaters. And it was a really cool experience, especially in the 3D. So I'm looking forward to have that and be able to watch that here in the office, the Fortress of Solitude, very soon. And uh, Daniel is continuing to try to get through, so we'll see what happens. But lots of stuff happening in the publishing world as well. I know that Tim Wagner, friend of the show, has a book out called They Kill, which is getting lots of good reviews, and I can't wait to read it myself. It seems like it's a new take on some genre standards. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, it's getting a lot of good reviews. I'm looking forward to reading that one. And so I know Daniel is looks like he's still trying to call in. So we'll I don't know what issues we're having tonight with the Blog Talk Radio, but this might be him now. Daniel, is that you?
I think this may be me, Michael. It's Steven.
Oh, hey, Steven.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Are you hearing me okay? Yes,
I
am. Yeah, I heard they got a hold of me and said Daniel's having some trouble getting in. So I'm here doing my best.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you had to do that.
I'll have to catch up
but I do
with you to what you've covered so far, so I don't be redundant.
Well,
yeah,
I've been doing the whole waiting, you know, I've been doing the whole you know, my story and not trying to cannibalize the time, but trying to fill space while we're waiting for Daniel to call in. So
well,
I do welcome I do welcome another voice.
Yeah, I'll
be
honest. Yeah, yeah. That might be him now. Well, we'll see.
Daniel?
You've got Daniel on the line finally.
Well,
I don't know
what's
going on tonight, man. the 40th call finally made it through.
All right. Well,
yeah.
we had one person in the chat room posted one post, and that's all we've had. So I don't know if there's a network issue or what's going on, but
RG Westerman. Yeah, I saw her in there.
Yeah.
And just to explain to everybody, I had a passing in the immediate family just a day and a half ago, so I wasn't going to be on tonight, so I'm it may not be on my A game, just to let everybody know. But,
well, if you need to go any time now, Stephen, I don't know what was going on with this thing tonight, but it was not, you know, I'm sitting here with my cigar and my wine and everything and can't get on.
Well, it turns out we have somebody that was willing to jump in for me, and that's Thomas Moore. I think he's on the line right now. Is that him?
Thomas, you on the line with us?
I see him on the board. I just can't hear him.
I don't hear anything.
Hello?
Yeah, I don't hear anything either. Hello? Is this Thomas?
Hello?
Hello?
Who's
on the line?
Crank it up.
He's calling back, I think. But our guest is actually calling in right now. So have you done the ad yet, Michael, for this week? That might be.
I have not.
The
no,
sponsor?
I was...
Okay. Well, let me do that real quick. And then if Thomas comes back on, then we'll be set. Okay, this week's sponsor is fantasy author Sandy Lender. And fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. The TimelessTeens.com went nuts for the critters in her Dragons in Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. So thank you, Sandy, for being this week's episode sponsor on the show. So
thank you, Sandy.
All right.
And
yes,
Sandy probably wishes she was sponsoring a different episode.
Well, now it's underway. We're cruising, I hope. Now, I don't know what the glitch was. It was not on our side, though. Definitely not on our side.
No,
so I can tell that. Just
no, it was blocked off because they weren't letting me. They weren't even letting me come in.
Yeah, and I just squeaked in to start the show at the the last second. So.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even intentional. I've been trying for the last 10 minutes. So. normally, when I call in, it's squeaking in at the last second. But.
Well, let me bring our guest onto the show and at least get that part underway here. Let's see here. And what right now we're going to be having joining us is a gentleman who is an author, illustrator, and publisher. And he also writes under a pen name, Nicholas M. Parker, currently residing in Los Angeles, California. I am pleased to bring aboard on the Star Chamber show, Sebastian Shug. Welcome, Sebastian.
How are we doing it? How are we doing today?
There he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I was trying for about 10 minutes there too, so it might just be the signal.
I don't know what the issue was. Yeah.
There's something going on.
But
yeah.
But thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
Well, thank you for
man.
Working to get through to us.
Of course. I hope I didn't interrupt any segue or anything.
No. The only segue was us floundering, so you're fine.
I'll
live
right in. All right.
Broadcasting at your finest.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This is
all right.
This is the part on The Simpsons where they put up the. This is the part of The Simpsons where they put up that cue card of the guy behind the TV camera with the bottle in his hand drinking.
Right.
Oh man. Back when the seasons were good.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. It sounds good though now. So like, I guess we're knocking wood, but we're on course.
So good.
Yeah. That's good news. Well, Sebastian, this is your first time on the Star Chamber show, so I guess tell our audience, just a little bit about your work, just so we can get a little sense of your body of work as an illustrator and author.
Sure, yeah, okay. So I originally started at the age of 14. That's when I began professionally. It was my start in children's books, actually. And through there, I still do children's books every now and then, but ever since I started cultivating my own stories, it's mainly merged into satire. And it's mainly satire encompassing a plethora of different subjects. So you have like political, contemporary fiction, and it's mainly what I focus in, more so the type of humor that you'd push the envelope with. But it could be classified as dark comedy if I'm like speaking honestly. But in terms of like location and settings and characters and just how I base these stories, I base them off of real, true to life events and people in my life. I've lived in Los Angeles all my life, so there's definitely a lot of content to work with. But other than that, I mean, it's just pretty in Los Angeles. Yeah. But it's basically pretty cut and dry, the process when it comes to putting together a story and then telling it.
Very good.
Very cool. So you write under a pen name, Nicholas Parker.
I do, yes.
How did you arrive at the pen name?
This is a story that's very convoluted. There's like a three-step process when it came to this. So Nicholas is actually my grandfather's name. The term Parker, that's the part that comes in a series of steps. So whenever I thought of Parker, I always thought of Peter Parker from Spider-Man. And
right.
Spider-Man, you know, he's inherently red, and for lack of a better word, back when I was, you know, a lot more politically, satirically active, you could say, I focused a lot more on, like, the right side of the aisle. Now everything's free game with me. But back then I decided, oh, you know, that's going to be my focus. And so Nicholas Parker, yeah, it sounds pretty good. The M I just kind of threw in there for a bonus, I guess, to tie the name together.
Well, very cool. Peter,
when you started writing the story about me, how did you learn about me?
I started writing the story about me. Oh well, you know, I had to come up with a few things on the fly, but you know, I kind of winged it. But in terms of differentiating what to publish under my real name versus pen name, it fits a certain level of criteria where, you know, if this isn't something I would show the immediate public, I'd put it under the pen name. I mainly use it as a trial run for the projects I'm not quite too sure about. Needless to say, you know, I always look at them as rough drafts. So, it's, you know.
So what forms do you publish in?
Well,
I typically publish in ebook format. You can find my work in physical format as well, in both softcover and hardcover copies, as well as audiobook formats. I do narrate all my own projects as well. And the application to get featured in the bookstores is currently pending, but hopefully, you know, one day.
Well, you have a book called Take Your Ex Out for a Steak Dinner.
Yes.
What's
that? That is actually an autobiography of sorts. As weird as that sounds, but it's essentially an autobiography about my love life, my love lives throughout the years, going through high school up until now. And, you know, when it comes to something like that, you know, especially in like a telling of a personal story, I always want to try to make it as relatable as possible. So, you know, it's something that everyone's gone through at one point or another, whether it be a bad breakup or a relationship that just didn't work out start to finish, you know, in this instance. And I really, you know, through the use of no dialogue as what I decided to go with for the duration of the story, I'd really like the reader to, you know, be put in that kind of circumstance where it's like, you know, this does and can happen, you know, but at the end of the day, a steak dinner implies that, you know, there's goodwill, you know. And needless to say, if I bumped into my ex-girlfriend on the street, I'd say, hey, yeah, let's go to dinner, you know. So it's all in the name of fun, and it's all in the name of, you know, don't take it too seriously.
So it's S-T-E-A-K instead of S-T-A-K-E.
Because there are so many ways that could go.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Depending on what genre it is.
Yeah, I listed it as autobiographical romance. I think that fit the best bill, but you know.
And well,
I do
want to
dive
in
here real
challenges
quick to say that Thomas. Oh, Michael, we got Thomas Mort on the line. We got a clean signal finally. So he is on now to help tonight.
How's it going, guys?
What's going on, Thomas?
What's going on?
Not too much.
It's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Going to hang out with you amazing people this evening.
Well, it's going to be good because Thomas is actually heading out to Los Angeles next year. So he'll be heading out to Sebastian's way. So this is a good segue to have him be on the show here.
Oh, good luck. I mean, it's hot as hell here, you know. If the weather doesn't kill you, then the smog will.
Hey, man, I'm from the Tennessee South where it's real humid, so uh-oh. I'll take the dry heat out there with you any day.
We have literally the heat index.
I'll stay quiet at that point. I know how humid it can get, definitely. Oh, man.
Yeah, the heat index here in Indianapolis has been, all last week, it was like 105.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah, and this week it's been wonderful. This week it's been like a September weather pattern right now. So I'm enjoying it immensely.
Yeah, that's the way it's been down here yesterday and today. It's, you know, the high was like 80 comparatively.
Almost 100. Absolutely. Yeah, and it was 58 degrees when I left for work this morning, and I took the twin turbo out. There were windows down. I was like, it's a good morning right here.
there were some areas here in the state where it was literally like 49 degrees this morning.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I always joke, like in the winter, we're all like, oh, I can't wait for it to get hot. Or I can't wait for it to get hot. And then summer hits and we're like, oh, where's the fall and winter weather?
Yes.
I never
especially
long for
fall.
Winter, but I'll take a – yeah, fall is my favorite season anyway. So, I know my uncle is in San Diego, and they don't even have air conditioning in their apartment because they just get the ocean breeze. So, but I imagine LA gets a little more sweltering.
Hello.
We lose him?
Hello?
Sebastian.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Sorry, it was cutting in and out there. Yeah. What was the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying that the weather in L.A. is probably a little more sweltering than it is on the coast there in San Diego.
You know, it really does vary day to day, and that's kind of why I'm slowly growing farther and farther emotionally away from the California lifestyle. It's just, you know, one day it's 86, the next morning it's like 97, and, you know, that
right.
doesn't even count for humidity. You know, the beaches have been very kind, for lack of a better word, but it's just the unpredictability that doesn't sit well with me, you know. At least in one part of the country, if it's hot, it's hot and humid forever, you know, year-round. But I mean, it comes and goes. It really does. So
are you a beach bum?
You know, I never classified myself as that, but ever since college, I think I've come around. I really have.
So I know Daniel is very curious about this book that you illustrated about him. So what are the challenges of illustrating a children's book?
The challenges. Well, getting started for one. That seems like the generic answer with any project is just to like find the time to get started. In the beginning when I was only an illustrator, I actually didn't write The Adventures of Daniel. I was merely hired on, contracted on as the illustrator. And part of the struggle was finding out where the characters fit in the story. You know, it was a matter of getting a script, drawing the characters, and then, you know, reporting them to see if they, you know, fit the bill. You know, eventually I got the image down and I got the story down, how everyone should look and talk. And, you know, back then, me illustrating it as a 14, 15-year-old, you know, I had to make something that would appeal to a 4, 5, or 6-year-old. So my illustrations have always been cartoonish in nature, so that wasn't really the problem. It was just more along the lines of how to make it flow in a story. As the series went on and I eventually expanded it into, you know, including other characters and situations and locations, you know, it became a lot easier. But I guess to answer your question of like, you said the challenges you said, or just the general consensus?
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, I have illustrations that are done by various illustrators for my books as well. But I imagine the challenge of, you know, it's quite different to illustrate for a children's book than it is to illustrate for like an urban fantasy or horror story.
It's definitely a lot simpler to do it for a children's book. I will say that bright colors and black contrasted lines, you know, generally take up the majority of what you're looking at. You know, for lack of a better word, I have done both. I have done like those urban thrillers and the horror stories where a lot more detail is needed, you know, to convey that message. I will say that children's books are easier to illustrate, but they are a lot more time consuming in terms of expressions. So when you want to make someone look a certain way, you really got to make it pop. Now when it comes to something more like young adult, like that urban thriller or the horror, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can get away with more like shading and more detail. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
More
intricacy. Yeah, exactly.
You're saying that you got hired on at 14 or 15 to do the illustrations. How did you get into it at that age?
14. Was it 14? Yes. So I was actually I was sketching in my math class, my sophomore algebra 2 class. And, you know, for lack of a better word, you're not supposed to. The teacher leans over my shoulder. Yeah. The teacher leans over my shoulder and, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to get it. Like, that's it. It's a wrap. Detention. You know, but she looks at it and she says, you know, that's actually really good. I have someone in mind who wants to put together, you know, a children's book. And, you know, at this point in my life, I'd never gone on so far as to finish a sketchbook, let alone, you know, a children's book, let alone professionally. You know, it started with a phone call and, my author, he wanted one book. One book turned into a series of six, and eventually that series turned into a conglomerate of 30. You know.
Wow.
And yeah. Wow. So, you know, and this is done over the span of 5 years, and during those 5 years, that time was spent doing other projects as well, and through those other projects, such as like fiction and satire, that's where I really started to incorporate what I've learned over the years into the Adventures of Daniel. So if you look at book one versus book 15 to book 30, radically different artistic styles. It was all hand drawn to digitally drawn into the type of style that I'd classify professionally as the Adventures of Gumball style. I don't know if you've seen the cartoon, but it's basically superimposing it's superimposing cartoonish graphics on an otherwise realistic background, and therefore it gives a more heightened contrast. It worked, you know, to say the least.
It's come into a very popular style now too, though.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was just a matter of seeing what fit, and you know, the Adventures of Daniel will always be sort of the experimental phase for me, which, you know, I'm never going to regret, but I'm always going to look back on and, you know, be like, oh wow, that looks different than how I initially intended it would be.
But that's your start, so.
That's my start. That is the genesis.
Yeah, everybody starts somewhere. Forgive my ignorance. I'm coming in like halfway through here. Do you write children's novels as well? I know you were illustrating them, but were you writing them too?
At the time, I actually wasn't. No worries. At the time, I actually wasn't writing children's books. I've since gone on to write children's books. That deviates into two categories, though. So I have standalone children's books that I would show to kids, and children's books, quote unquote, that follow a more contemporary slash dark comedy style. And what I mean by that is it looks like a children's book, but the subject matter is inherently not. It's more so like the juxtaposition
right.
of adult themes mixed with childish drawings, you could say. But I mean, it's innately childish because it's, you know, it's the same style that I used for The Adventures of Daniel.
So
well,
like
if it's political satire, the childish
like
probably works.
Yeah, the childish the childish drawings and the political satire, it's definitely seen its fair share of novels published. yeah.
So how do you knock yourself, I guess, down in a mental capacity to formulate a children's book versus being back up in the satirical, you know, political area?
Interesting.
How do you sit down and I'm going to write a children's book today and get in that mode
and I'm
going to
do like
know that it's going to be simplified
tomorrow? So I tend to work on different projects all at once. I'll often encompass myself with about 4 or 5 ideas at a time, and that altogether seems daunting at first. However, I look at it as a separate entity. So if I want to focus on a big project that I've been brooding over for, you know, let's say a few months to a year, you know, I'll focus on that. But when I'm in the mood to just sort of turn my brain off, for lack of a better word, and write sort of a simplified story, something that I've been kicking around, but with not really too much, you know, I don't want to say effort because I don't want to sound like I'm not trying, but at the same time, you know, it is a more simplified project. So in that state of I'm going to relax today, but I still want to do work, I'll crank out a children's novel, or I'll do some childlike adaptation of something not childlike. You know what I mean? So I'll take like a situation or a circumstance that I can adapt in a childish way that I already have the subject matter for, and then I'll send that out.
Maybe that works.
Well, you know, I see that you're studying political science, art, and law. You know, it's like which of these things is not like the other?
that's actually funny. It's a little bit outdated that bio. At the moment, I am still studying political science as well as art and law, but there's also a fourth category. It's also communication studies, and that's more so in the realm of marketing, just general, you know, communication with individuals. Politics and art, the combination has been my driving focus for a lot of my subject matter, and I think communication just gave it that final push into. Hey, this is my degree, you know? So.
Right.
I try not to limit myself on subjects, but.
So what kind of feedback do you get on, I mean, you in this day and age, if you do anything political, you open yourself up to all kinds of slings and arrows. So what kind of a response, you know, what have you gotten in general? And what's been your favorite response to one of your political satires?
So when I initially publish to my established audience base, you know, I'll mostly get feedback encompassing, you know, oh, great illustrations, great subject matter. I really like how you adapted this. You know, to give a few general examples. Politically, I'm very open to discussion. I'm very open to argumentation, and I'm not one to stir the pot in order to convince someone of a certain political opinion. You know, I'm going to respect the opposition, And I'm also going to respect supporting opinions while not trying to hop on some kind of bandwagon in order to degrade the other. Now, I'll make satire
right.
making fun of the other party, but that's not without making fun of what I believe in myself, you know, without going into too much
right.
detail of that. You know, so I always tend to play on an equal playing field. And, you know, I always put a disclaimer in regards to political satire saying, you know, this is political satire. This is what you're getting into. You know, this is why before you buy a book, you read the first few pages of it, you know? So, for, you know,
right.
for lack of a better word, I try to be the most transparent as possible, you know, but at the same time, I can't give away too much. So what I'll do is I'll formulate my, say, political opinions in a very snarky tone, in a very satirically snarky tone in order to, like, instigate humor, or at the very least to instigate a response to be like, oh, well, he thinks this way, but he's talking like this. But at the end of the day, you know that he's, you know that it's just in it for fun. And that's really what it is. You know, in terms of, like, negative feedback, sure, I've gotten my fair share, but it's, you know, it hasn't stopped me from publishing, you know, on a general sense. But it's also, I'm not publishing to build an ego. You know, I'm really not. So,
right.
Any, like, personal,
this
political.
This morning they gave you a whole new thing on TV, didn't they?
You know, you know, it's funny. I saw that. I sat through 5 minutes of it, and then I immediately went to Twitter and I tweeted, you know, you can be, and I quote, you can be as politically active as you want. It doesn't mean that you won't go to bed angry. So at the end of the day, I try to cater to both sides, whatever political situation you want to involve yourself with. You know, it's, I'm not one to stir the pot.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that this morning, and I'm just like, what difference does it make? Y'all are not
yeah.
settling anything right here. Yeah,
you're not going to settle it right here. You know, much less right now. So it's
well, yeah, and I don't know. I've for a long time I've said, you know, nothing is really going to get done in Washington so long as there are no term limits imposed on senators and congressmen. But since the senators and congressmen are the ones who would have to vote for term limits, I don't see that ever
happening. Never going to happen.
A catch 22.
But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the political theater and the rise of the 24-hour news and just the, you know, every little thing becomes a headline, you know, no matter what it
yeah.
is, no matter how insignificant or significant, it just all becomes a wall of news.
I mean, I definitely appreciate the fact that I can tune in anytime, anywhere, and just, you know, get the news, but it's such a
right.
double-edged sword to the fact where it's like, you know, it becomes daunting. It really does. And that's the moment to answer your question further. That's the moment where I take a break from political satire and go back to my children's books. You know, like I can't be focused on it for 24/7, you know,
right.
You know.
Well, it's like me.
I
figure if it gets bad enough, you know, somebody's going to have it on Facebook, Instagram, or one of those, you know, so I'll hear about it. So.
Yeah. It's already on Twitter. It's already on Facebook. And, you know, it just reminds me of the days where that's not what it used to be about. You used to just see what your friends were up to. And it's definitely
right.
changed. I don't know for the better, but it's definitely brought us closer in how we understand news. So I guess if I can appreciate it for that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because now, you know, you have different, I've seen different curriculum where they've actually started classes to determine, you know, what is news, you know, what what is the, for want of a better word, fake news as opposed to, you know, legitimate stories. And it's interesting that we've come to the point now where you have to try to differentiate the two. You know, it used to be that, and I'm dating myself here, but, you know, you'd sit down and you'd watch, you know, the Walter Cronkites or the Tom Brokaws or whatever in the evening news, and you never doubted anything that came out of their mouth. You know, I mean, it was the news. And now it's, you know, everybody's got their own agenda, their own slant, their own, you know, party line that they're trying to toe, and it's just to try to get to the, you know, it's curious, it's interesting. Have you ever, being in the political satire realm, do you ever watch news from other countries and how they report what's going on in America? Like the BBC News or anything of that nature?
It's not for my lack of trying, you know, and it's also not for my lack of finding the right channel, you know, given my cable network. You know, I do try to be involved, you know, as international as I can.
Right.
You know,
well,
it's
very interesting,
yeah.
because I would say
in the political... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's very humbling to see other people from, you know, other countries report on our, you know, political system and what's going on in America and our squabbles compared to, you know, what's going on in their countries.
Yeah, it really does give you like a frame of reference. 'Cause I mean, yeah, there are a lot of countries out there that, you know, are doing financially better and worse than us. And I do think that comparison and contrast is very important. And I also believe that if you spend your days watching nothing but American TV, you're going to have a very polarized perspective. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on.
Right.
It's a breath of fresh air, I will say, to tune into like BBC or any of the other ones. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but it is good to expose yourself to that different media.
Yeah, but you know, and then when it gets to be too much, that's when you turn to the children's books.
Exactly. You can't focus on politics forever, so I don't try to.
To give us an idea, what was the last political satire that you did? What was it about?
So the last political satire that I did was, ironically, the shortest book that I've ever done. So I'll preface this. Of what's going on in the millennial news as of late. So online, there is a female streamer that shall remain unnamed. And you may have seen this in the news, but she basically makes her living off of playing video games and, for lack of a better word, selling half-nude photographs online.
Okay.
Now, I'm not one for dissing one's hobbies or how one makes a living, but it really got to the point, you know, what kind of rubbed me the wrong way in a sense is when she started selling her own bathwater. And this is, I hear the scoffs from, you know, from the recording studio. So essentially, I looked at this and I'm like, you know, this woman is selling her bathwater for $30 a jar. I need to comment on this. So what I did, you know, what did I do? I wrote a book about it, and it's the shortest book I've ever written. Political in nature, I'd say so. It's a one-page book that just says capitalism on it in quotes, and that's it. That's it. You know, I sent it to her.
She's got people that are willing to buy it. More
you
power
have,
to
no, no. What's worse, you have people willing to spend thousands of dollars on her.
He's not kidding.
No, you're not. This isn't counting the money from the sales. No, this is counting the money that she gets online playing video games and, you know, cosplaying and whatever her hobbies are. You know, we're talking $1,000 to $2,000 donations at this point.
Yep.
And, you know, would I call it political? I mean, economically, I'm sure she's doing fantastic, but it just kind of goes to show it's like, you know, capitalism. There you go. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for a more in-depth project, I could probably find one that'll better suit your question.
I remember years ago, Mike Judge was on David Letterman's show, and he says, so what's this Beavis and Butthead all about? And so then Mike Judge does his Beavis and Butthead like laughs, and David Letterman's like, no offense, but I could have done that. And Mike Judge is like, yeah, but I thought of it first.
There you go. You know, it's all about doing something so absurd that it just latches onto you. You know, it really does make a following, as ridiculous as it sounds.
Well, I mean, the bathwater thing started with, like, dirty old men making comments like, I'd drink your bathwater. And she was like, well, I'll sell you some. And then it blew up.
You know, people were drinking it. People were vaping it. People were...
He said vaping it.
Vaping it. They would put it in a vape mod, and they would vape this. This is all online. This is...
Really?
You know, It's ridiculous.
I'm out of touch
with
all this stuff, so I'm...
You know what? It's better
to
be out
him
of touch
now. He's in.
It really is.
Daniel's like, the 1800s were so much better.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Take me back. But it just kind of goes to show, like, people will do anything to, you know, to make that statement, to make that money. And, you know, again, more power to them. They have more bravery than I ever would. But it's things like that that deserve being called out on, you know. And I think with writing and illustrating, you know, it's really the only way that I've ever learned how to do it. So why not make it work for me, you know?
What are your sales on your books going right now? How are they doing?
So right now they're averaging relatively well. You know, I will say ballpark figure, I do make, you know, on top of my current job, I do make an extra, I would say, $75 to $150 a month. Again, this is from, you know, collective, you know, distributors. We're talking Amazon, Barnes & Noble,
right.
Kobo, iBooks, Google Books, you know, the list goes on. You know, we're talking physical, ebook, audiobook. That's all into one, you know, that's all like one pool.
So you're not in the millions like Michael is in.
Well, hopefully one day, but yeah. Hopefully one day. Isn't that the dream, you know?
Yeah, you know, after they made
that one
movie from Michael's books and everything, he got that big royalty check and everything.
Yeah. You're back from Bizarro World, evidently. But no, it is interesting that the different you were pointing out that, you know, it's across all the platforms and whatnot. But it is interesting the different structures and you know the different medias and how much authors receive from an audio sale versus a physical sale versus a Kindle or Kobo sale. It's a whole new world.
It is. It is. And you really do sometimes have to take your wins with your losses. I mean, you may, you know, for lack of a better word, you may get screwed over and receive a lower percentage. You know, at the end of the day, I wasn't really in this for the money. I mean, I guess I am now, but I'm not going to say that. Well, okay, don't get that idea twisted. You know, I'm not doing this, you know, for greed's sake. It's a matter of, like, you know, now that the money is starting to come in, you know, of course I welcome it, and, you know, it encourages me to do more. But the one thing that is always going to encourage me, regardless of money, is, you know, the ability to tell those stories, you know. So, again, I may get only 10% of a royalty up to 80%. You know, that's usually my highest. And for me, I'm not going to complain about it, because it's a matter of getting those books out there, you know, and having people
right.
enjoy them, you know, surfacing their own ideas from, you know, adaptations.
On your
what
books
you
and everything that you've got.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay. Like on you said that you do all your books in audio and stuff like that too. How much is lost in a book like what you do in an audio format?
You're asking in terms of how much they take as a cut?
No.
I think what he's saying is that when you do a political satire or a children's illustrated book, and then you do an audio version, you know what
mm-hmm.
You know, how especially like with political satire and whatnot, you say that you have a kind of a snarky persona. Is
mm-hmm.
that how you translate it to audio, or?
Yeah.
They
that's
lose
exactly
anything
right.
from not having the pictures in there and stuff, or?
Well, essentially, when it comes down to like picture books, you know, just the general idea of, you know, the story is mostly an illustration rather than, you know, a simple textbook that you could flip through. I've marketed my audiobooks as a combination pack. So if it's predominantly, like, let's take, for example, a children's book, I wouldn't obviously narrate it in a snarky tone. You know, I'd narrate it in a more soothing tone, but I would encourage readers to, you know, you could buy the physical book or the ebook as long as they can have it in front of them open, as well as a read-along. And then there's the audiobook, you know, so, you know, that's potentially double the sale there. Now, when it comes
right.
to political satire, that's where the snark happens, you know, and, you know, I'll read it
right.
in a very, you know, it's either a very monotone voice, a very passive aggressive voice. It's mainly just to fit the circumstance of what I'm reading.
Right.
Yeah.
And do your politicals, are they illustrated also, or are they just written?
Some are, yeah. So some are illustrated. The first political satire that I wrote under Nicholas Parker, it's actually a series of four. It's called The Bigot's Guide to Self-Worth. And it's essentially making fun of very... very much like the jingoistic personality of, you know, the male chauvinist. And it's 25 pages, each with their own illustration of, like, in capturing this image of, like, the egotistical, hardworking, money hungry bigot, for lack of a better word. I mean, that's, you know, in the name of the title. And I published that back in, I believe, 2016. But since then, it's expanded into a series where it's encompassed not only the left and the right. And, you know, spoiler alert, at the end of the fourth book, they get along and they realize that it's not that serious. So both characters, I mean, both representative characters of both sides of the aisle. And, you know, in that circumstance, you know, that's where I would use that kind of tone of voice, you know.
Yep. Okay. Well, I didn't know whether you illustrated them or not. So.
Yeah, no, it's sorry, kind of a long-winded answer, but certain projects I do, certain projects I like leave to just text, you know, if it'll just fit well in a paragraph versus an image.
Right. Yeah, Michael's asking what are you working on currently right now?
So currently I'm trying to pull up a list of my files at the moment. So right now I'm actually working on a few projects, collaborative projects, for an adaptation of a web series. It's also political satire, but it's more so contemporary humor, and a continuation, I should say, of one of my series of I'm trying to find the file. It's basically a series. It's essentially a series delving into the flaws of customer service. And calling that out. You know, it's more so in the drafting phase as of late, but right now it's sort of taking shape. So.
Yeah, I just got done with that customer service issue the other day. So.
Oh. please do tell. I probably experienced it.
Ordered something online. 3 days later, I still hadn't had a confirmation on it or when it's going to ship or anything like that. I call up the company. And it was something that was on an 88% discount for 48 hours. And
okay. So you're wondering if you got that discount or not.
Well, I said, and I, called them up.
Hmm.
I gave them my credit card information and all that stuff, when I ordered it and did all that. Well, it still hadn't showed up in my bank or anything like that. We don't have any, acknowledgement of that order and everything. It must have dropped out on our computer. I said, well, then I'm not getting my product. Is that what you're telling me? Well, I can't order mm-hmm. that product now. It's no longer, it's no longer available. I'm like, so what are you are you telling me that I'm not getting what I order?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't, I can give you this product, which is, at the regular price. And we're talking about, one of them was, $107. The other one had been $600 and something. And I was just like,
wow.
No, I don't think so. I had some explicit that I put in there when I was talking to that person. I was like, basically what you're telling me is you are useless.
so they essentially took your money is what I'm hearing?
No, they never took the money out. They never did anything like that. They're saying they never got the order.
But they didn't take your money, but you're not getting your stuff.
Right.
Hmm.
And it was something that I really wanted, but I wasn't going to pay, $600 something for the same thing that I had ordered a couple of days before that at $100 something.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
Well, Sebastian, tell people where they can find you online.
Of course. Sure. So I'll start generally. So if you look up my name, Sebastian Shug, on Google, just type that in, you'll see a collection of numerous projects that I've worked on. It's not all of them. However, if you do go to my website, which it's half website, half archive, at the moment.
How do you spell your last name, Sebastian?
Oh, it's S-C-H-U-G. It's a German last name. Yeah. So it's essentially half website, half archive. It's www.itsonthehousekid.wordpress.com. yes, at this moment, a domain is not established. Sue me. I get it. and it's currently being updated at the moment. And this features not only independent projects that I've worked on and series, but as well as collaborative projects with numerous authors, illustrators, musical artists as well, and videographers. And this also showcases my graphic design as well, several narrations that I've done in terms of like what you can expect from my audiobooks, and so much more. And again, it's still currently being updated because the number of projects increases every day. But in terms of specificity, again, author info is available online. If there's a certain book that you would like to look up, you know, feel free. Just be sure to add Sebastian Chug at the end. Same goes for Nicholas Parker. You could generally find me on Google, but in terms of distribution sales, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, Google Books tend to be a few of the big names. You also have like second and third party sources like Tolino, Kobo, 24 Symbols, Baker & Taylor actually happens to be one that's sort of up and coming now that I recently signed on to. Those tend to go more in like the third party. The audio distribution sales, you have Audible, you have ACX, you also have, you know, I don't remember what their service is off the top of their head, but I believe it's like Barnes & Noble, like for audiobooks, or Barnes & Noble Art Audio. It's one of those, but basically, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of looking up my name and something will come up. The itemized list, or how you say, is found on Amazon. That's where you can pretty much find all of my books, you know, not exactly organized by year, unless, you know, that suits your fancy. I think they have like options to do that. But essentially that's where all of them were birthed. And then the distributors, they take it from there.
Very cool. You said, I heard somewhere in the conversation that you're a publisher also. Do you publish
Yes.
other people's books or just your own?
I publish other people's books as well. Yeah. So those collaborative projects found, you know, it doesn't even involve me writing or illustrating. It's just a matter of sending those files out there. And that's all there is to it.
So what is your, what part of the publishing
imprint.
Process do you do?
So when I receive the files initially from a potential author or artist, what I do is I do a quick glance over to make sure, you know, of course, spelling and grammar is correct, but also formatting. Now, the role of a publisher is to make sure that this book can be found in all mediums as efficiently as possible. So what I'll do is, aside from formatting the files into, you know, ebook and physical measurements, because, you know, more so physical because that's what the trade paperback will be printed as, it's more along the lines of negotiating with the author of what the vision is, as well as what a compromise is that can be established. So if an author wants a book to look a certain way, if let's say he or she has his or her own illustrations, it's a matter of telling that author, listen, this is how I believe it'll look the best. This is how I believe that, you know, it won't get screwed over when it comes to the printing process, which is invariably a hurdle, because I believe that an artist's mind is much, much larger than the actual restrictions that are presented to them. And, you know, with me being in graphic design, it's as simple as just moving that for them at no extra cost. But being a publisher is largely the role of being an editor as well. And, you know, that extra work, it doesn't come out in the form of like an upfront cost. It more so comes out in the form of like royalty distributions and how much of a percentage I get back for their project.
Very good.
So I'm going to chime in because I've been mostly listening. Just on a quick note, and I don't mean in disrespect, but it's really like super refreshing to hear someone at such a young age, you know, being 21. I noticed that earlier when I was reading through your information. I was like, oh my gosh, like really seems like they've got it locked in and like are enjoying themselves and like working with their passion. And it's really incredible.
Thank you. No, I really do appreciate that. It's always nice to hear from, you know, members of like an older community who sort of take pride in like what the next generation can do, you know. And I just kind of want to be that type of person to show that, you know, with my perspective, as snarky as it may be, there is a message in there, you know.
You're definitely on the path, so, man. You're working your way towards it. It's gonna be fantastic for you.
I've got a request. It's not a question. It's a request. Pull out
sure.
one of your snarky books and read just a little bit of it in your snarky voice.
Will do. Let's see. Okay. Bear with me. It might be a little while.
No problem. And while you're looking for that,
is there anything special
we haven't? Okay.
Oh no. Go ahead. I'm still looking for it.
Well, I was just going to say, is there anything that you can think of that we haven't touched on that before we wrap things up that you wanted to touch on?
I think you've covered pretty much all bases, unless there's anything more about the process or in terms of like, you know, projects that you'd like to ask about. I think we pretty much hit all bases.
Well, let's hear your snarkiness.
All right. So this is an unreleased project that I plan on releasing silently to the public. It won't be made available in any particular bookstores. This is more so for the people who happen to find it. And to kind of just preface this once more as a wrap up. So this book is called Poseurs, the Coffee Shop Personas. And it's meant to verbally attack the type of people that you find in coffee shops that are way too into their work artistically and are an all around nuisance. those who put on airs and essentially have this ego of just, you know, I'm better than everyone in here, essentially. So it's a very short book. It only encompasses 5 subjects. And again, if this falls into a category that you most identify as, I'm not making fun of you as a disclaimer, but at the same merit, I am. So again, I take it with a grain of salt. So I think this would best fit into what I align with. This is known as the quote unquote illustrator. So here we go. Statistically, and most recognizable as the title artist is concerned, one who draws or illustrates is often what is most associated with the term. Whether it be traditional, digital, or some other form of expressive canvas blotting, escaping the incessant feud consisting primarily of internet comments proclaiming which style to be better, more or less subjective, and above all else, best looking, is a conversation best steered clear from. The scratches and rubbing akin to that of a methadone clinic need not be misinterpreted. Those are only the sounds of the self-proclaimed, self-taught artist fidgeting away in the corner with about 18 pens too many, scrawling between pages torn, trashed, and falling apart. I suppose one man's creative process is another man's mental breakdown. Assuming they don't lug his or her computer, tablet, and free trial of Adobe Illustrator to the cafe, illustrators often theatricize their intense creative ability with such vigor, you'd almost think they'd want to be noticed, picked up, and brought up to stardom in the span of 24 hours. First of all, keep dreaming. Los Angeles is too goddamn big of a pond for you, small fry. The internet, in your vain hopes of reaching a wider audience, denotes your actual humanity to a series of ones and zeros. How's that for distinction? One thing's for certain in damn near every wannabe graphic artist, another insufferable variant of artistry, repertoire. They sure know how to sell you the most useless pieces of paper to ever take up space on your bedroom wall. And if you ever think about snagging a commissioned piece for less than a Jackson, get bent. And better yet, get real. Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, and Disney's animated shows haven't been halfway decent in almost a half decade. And there you go.
Okay, so we have a that was fantastic, by the way. There from the
Thank
chat
you.
Room, and you're amongst writers. Is do you have one for writers? Well, now we have to know. Like now we're curious.
I do. But you know what? I could go through them all if you'd like. You know, it's only five pages, but.
What?
But I'll do the writers if that'll quell
okay.
the okay, so the writer. Perhaps the most bare bones method of representation and communication imaginable, the English lexicon has been the building blocks of numerous great literary works, subject matter, and ideas. It's also been used to showcase some of the worst stories the 21st century has to offer. Take a guess which one Notebook McBallpoint happens to be creating. We've all seen the type, cup of coffee in hand, ferociously typing away in a version of Microsoft Office far outside of the lifespan of the douchebag writing in it. What usually emerges is a document of mismatched plot points and a character arcs so ridiculously cheesy you dislocate your mandible taking a bite out of it. Forget about pacing, proper development, tone, setting. What even is all that anyway? Assuming you do actually finish your best-selling manuscript, quote-unquote, you'll most likely only sell 10 copies, assuming you have 10 close relatives.
I'm
not sure that's the note you wanted to end on, but
I feel attacked.
I'm happy.
No, that's great.
yeah.
That's why I displayed it, honestly.
Well, you know, Sebastian, thanks for coming. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And
you know what? Thank you for letting me read that. I really do appreciate it. It's almost like getting that off my chest.
Well, we appreciate
it. Hey, Sebastian, do you have anything on directors?
Hey.
I have one on screenwriters.
There you go.
I've heard enough. I have been attacked enough.
I'll stop. Don't worry.
Stir the pot. Stir the pot.
Stir the pot. Yeah.
Well, Sebastian, we thank you so much for coming on, and we appreciate the people in the chat room and the listeners for putting up with our not so much our technical difficulties, but the network's and the format's technical difficulties that we ourselves had to deal with to even get on here to offer you this fine hour plus of programming. But again, Sebastian, thank you so much for coming, and Daniel, thank you for dialing and redialing and redialing.
Hey, it was only 40 times. I mean,
yeah, only 40. You know, it's the 41st time that's the charm.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah,
and Thomas, thank you for pitch hitting for Stephen there.
No, absolutely, glad to help, guys.
Yeah, and again, thank you
and,
so much for having me on and everything like that. I really do
appreciate
it.
You coming on.
It was a joy.
Oh, absolutely, and man, keep up what you're doing. You're doing great stuff. It's fantastic to see.
When are you gonna make it out to the other side of the world?
Like internationally, or just like or in general.
Or just like the Midwest.
To like Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, Indiana.
Oh, well, I guess stay tuned for the next episode.
Because we have a great event coming up in October called Imaginarium that being more to have you there. So
definitely. I mean, I'd love to have more information about it.
I sent you a friend request on Facebook, and I'll get you some Imaginarium information over to you. But you should definitely come out, man. It's a great writing convention.
Fantastic. I just accepted it.
we have about 160 panels and a fun 3 or 4 days, whatever you want to come for.
Sounds great. I will definitely keep in touch with you about that. That sounds like a great outlet.
And then you can watch one of Thomas's movies and, you know, meet the Michael West, and
you can write a nice little complimentary thing about my filmmaking if you'd like. It's fine. I won't cry too much.
Yeah. Complimentary. Yeah. Quote unquote.
Complimentary
yeah.
and snark.
Yeah, you can take the coffee. You can take the coffee house letters and make it into convention letters and talk about convention goers.
You're going to have some stuff on convention goers.
I'm
going to
have some new material. Oh, this is going to be fun, honestly.
Yeah, I want to see the section on furries.
that's a whole book in and of itself. Okay.
Ooh, you know what we could do? We could hire a model. We could hire a model. Go to the store, grab some bottles of water and some mason jars from like a hobby store, and sell her quote bath water. See how much money we make. I'm just saying.
Oh,
I'm just saying.
Lord.
That's a little bit.
I have
of
a nice steak dinner.
You got it going.
I hope I didn't give you any bad ideas, honestly. I mean, like, I was thinking about
Thomas is going to make his next movie about that.
I should make a movie about that.
There you go.
Bath water.
Every time somebody drinks it, they pass out.
I'll be sure to send you a copy of the manuscript of the bathwater book.
I'm in. We'll feature it. We'll feature it in the short.
All right. Well, this has been another fine episode of the Star Chamber Show. And again, thank you to my co-host, Daniel Dark, and also Thomas Moore for filling in.
Hey, he knew it.
Huh?
You knew my last name.
He knew it was back there someplace. He had just pulled up to the front.
All right, guys. We all have a good night. It was fun.
It was.
Thank you, Thomas.
All right. Take care, everyone. And next week, we'll join us at 9 p.m. for Eastern for another fun-filled Star Chamber show, and hopefully technical difficulty-free episode at that point.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Thank you guys so much again. It's really been a pleasure.
All right. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Night, everyone.
See ya.
Night, Michael. Everybody have a good week.
Night.
We will talk to you again next week at Star Chamber. Good night.
But